Oh, what a pleasure to have them Coolie Boys frontman Soren Staff on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. They're an Eau Claire-based Americana band. Five members will explore themes from their fourth album and check in these crazy times. Here's a bit of the title track Namesake about the responsibility that comes with being named after a loved one.
Hope I've grown to be my mother by the time I have a son. Hope he takes after my father. Hope they just be who they want. Hope my friends will all surround them like crazy uncles and aunts. Hope they know that they don't have to be related to be loved. It's just love.
And a shout out to Joey in Bayfield, who called into our music hour recently and put us hot on the trail of them Coolie Boys. Have you heard the album Namesake? What did you think? 800-642-1234. Soren Staff is the band's singer, guitarist, and songwriter, spanning genres like folk, bluegrass, and occasionally punk rock. Soren, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hey, thanks for having me, Kate. I appreciate it.
Oh, hi. So, you know, for so many bands, your sustenance is your audience, especially those live fans who are living your music in the moment, asking for more. You've been on tour late last year in the winter, but you canceled your last venue. What are these pandemic times like for making music and performing?
I think every musician has learned throughout their whole career, not even during the pandemic, that you got to be flexible. And, you know, it got a little more intense with that in the last couple of years. But, you know, it's, you jump through hoops, you're always jumping through hoops to make sure that you can go through with the performance the way you want it to. And during COVID, those hoops just got a little more official and a little bit larger. But, you know, we've been able to find a way to be able to get out there and see our people. And that's how we make our living. So we've been able to do it. And it's been tough. It's been weird. But that's kind of just par for the course if you're in a band.
Tough and weird. And certainly what I hear you saying is being nimble is really an important asset for being a band member.
Yeah, you know, flexibility, you know, just in any group setting is always going to be valuable.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're making public health decisions, when you just thought you were going to be playing a guitar, you need to be flexible too. So it's kind of weird. You know, we were never prepared for something like this. But I think us and so many other people in this career have adapted and made do.
Have you found more time or energy for songwriting? Has your songwriting taken a turn in these times?
Right at the beginning of the pandemic, you know, when we were locked down and things were shut down, you know, I wasn't working any other jobs. I work as a substitute teacher mm-hmm. as well, and then I work at a store that my friend runs, but. In those moments, I didn't have anything to do. So all I really could do was go and write music. You know, I wasn't sure the next time we would be coming back and playing live shows. So I had to put that energy somewhere. And luckily, we have a little studio space that I could isolate in. And I spent most of the beginning of 2020 just writing and processing. And it definitely gave me an opportunity to focus on that in ways I hadn't before, mm-hmm. which I was thankful for, but definitely was something I was not used to.
Well, before we get into Namesake, just give us the elevator speech on them Coolie Boys. What brought your band together? What do you represent in music making?
Yeah, well, my best friend, Bo Janke, he was the banjo player in the band. We met at a summer camp in Chautauqua, Wisconsin. We were counselors up there. And the next summer, my little brother, Jens, joined us there. And we had to play three worship services a day, playing guitar and banjo and mandolin. And we cut our teeth doing that. And, you know, over the it's been about 7-8 years since we started the band, and ever since we've added bass, we've added drums, and the niche that we're kind of trying to carve out is, you know, we have this folk Americana sound, but we are entertainers. We love to have fun. Mm. We love to get people out dancing, but we also, when people come to a show, we want them to feel something too. Mm. So we balance the bombasticness of the way sometimes our music sounds with the themes that I like to talk about and sing about, which can be personal and intense. And I think that's kind of what has attracted people to listen to us.
We're going to explore those themes with Soren Staff here, one of five band members of Them Cooley Boys. The Eau Claire band recently released their fourth album, Namesake. So the song Namesake has special meaning to you. You're named after your grandmother, and your brother is named after a great-grandparent. Let's take another listen. And I saw that same face, my namesake. We're out the land of the same place for time. Even if we all ain't got the same name, I'll be proud to call you up there. Sure enough. So this is about family and quite special to you. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, I like to write songs about things that I feel intensely about. And, you know, I've been wanting to write a song about my grandparents for a long time, just because both sets of grandparents, my mom's side and my dad's side, have been so special and important to me. And I had begun writing this song using kind of imagery from, you know, their lives. And then at the beginning, it was the spring of 2020, and my grandfather on my mom's side began to pass. And he was, he was featured heavily in the song. And it wasn't finished yet, but I was able to, it felt important in the moment to, we were able to zoom in because they live out in Washington State. Mm-hmm. And I was able to play a section for the song for Grandpa, you know, while he was in the hospital. So that was very important. And I still hadn't finished the song. And then I eventually ended up playing the song at his funeral a few months later. And, I like creating things that honor people, and I like creating things that, you know, make people feel intensely. And that song became so important to me and my family, just because it was a way to honor and help, you know, those people live on. And I think a lot of this record is about legacy and about, what we leave behind. And I wanted just a testament to like the incredible person that my grandpa was and that the rest of my grandparents were. So yeah, it was definitely, when we finally recorded it a year later or 9-10 months later, it became clear that it should be the title track, because it just kind of encapsulated what we are going for with the whole sound.
Oh, that's really beautiful. There would be no other title track. That it just seems so clear. Yeah. I want to move on to Hallelujah. And, sometimes I think Leonard Cohen and Jeff Buckley especially cornered the market on that word, because when I saw the song's title and I hadn't listened to it yet, I said, is it going to be, never mind. Let's take a listen.
I remember saying.
Soren, I love that refrain. That is just beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, bringing up the Leonard Cohen one is really funny, because I remember saying, we can't call it Hallelujah, guys. And they're like, but what else are you going to call it? You know, sometimes it just informs itself.
I'm really drawn by those backup vocals that really help the song, I think, because it carries me through in a way. There's just this lightness to it, that a little bit of airiness.
Yeah, that's our friend Rachel Calvert. She plays in a band in Minneapolis called Barbro. They're my favorite bluegrass band in the Midwest. And she is just so unbelievably talented. She sang a bunch of backup vocals on the record and she played some violin. And you're right, she adds, kind of this angelic little thing to it. It's not necessarily a song about religion or any of that stuff, but it is a song about grace. Mm. And I think like she adds a little softness or deafness to it that just like makes the song so gorgeous.
Soren Staff with us, frontman for Them Cooley Boys. We'll take one more listen to the song Hallelujah off their latest album, Namesake. Join in with your thoughts about the music flowing from this Eau Claire-based band, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're spending some time with the lead singer from Them Cooley Boys, Soren Staff, on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, Eau Claire-based Americana band. This is Phil's song about a close friend of the band who died by suicide. But the band wanted the song to reflect who Phil was, that is, a happy, upbeat person. Have you used music or art to get through something traumatic? How are you coping with help from music? 800-642-1234, singer-songwriter and guitarist Soren Staff with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's bring in Jody in Wausau. Jody, hi. What is your favorite song?
Hey, good morning, guys. It's tough for me to say exactly what the favorite song is, but I have a memory that sticks out. I've had the fortune of being able to see Them Cooley Boys just many, many times, many places. In the summer of 19, at the Blue Ox Festival, standing out in a field under pines in the middle of the day, these guys let loose with the harmonies from I Won't Be Defined. And I don't know how many of us were standing out in that field, but stranger after stranger just like started weeping and holding hands. And it was this most triumphant moment that certainly all the people I was there with, it was the talk. We still talk about it all the time. And they're moving guys. And Soren is just a wonderful poet who really speaks for us. And
Soren, what a moment.
Yeah. Blue Ox is one of our favorite places to play in. There certainly is some magic in those pines. And I remember that moment and I remember all those moments there. That song is a powerful song and it's become something meaningful to a whole lot of people. So we're just thankful every time we hear stories like that because I was moved to make music by being moved by music as well.
Oh, go ahead. I didn't want to cut you off there. Yeah, yeah.
No, you're heard. Good. So when you hear people being moved by it, you say, "Hey, it's being passed on." You know, like that inspiration is being moved to the next generation, and it makes you feel good.
Let's hear just a little bit of it.
Like a hollowed homestead, covered in gasoline. Oh, and no one loves a liar as much as they love nicotine. Now I ain't saying nothing that I don't mean.
Jody, thank you for that call. Let's go to Bertina now in Melrose. Bertina, hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. What is on your mind about Them Cooley Boys?
Well, my husband and I have followed them since the beginning. It was like the original four, and they would show up at parks and they would play, and they didn't have amps. They had a kick drum. So to see them go from that to now where they have, you know, a full stage set up, and I'm just so incredibly proud of them, and they put on such good music, and they've just been a really important part of my relationship with my husband. Them Cooley Boy concerts have been our date night through four kids, and you know, I mean, busy lives. It's like, you know, we always know that we're going to spend time together. We're going to go see them Cooley Boys, and we're going to have a really good time. So.
I love that story. I love that story, and especially the beginning. It's no amps, just you and the band, Soren.
Yeah, I mean, I remember our first show, we were sitting in a ski chalet, just three of us on some chairs, not plugged in or anything. So yeah, it's very fun to look back and see where you started and now to be playing on the stages we're at with the setup we got. You know, it's not lost on us that it doesn't help. I mean, that doesn't happen without, you know, support from people like Bertina. And it's just so, so valuable for us to have people connect the way they do, because that makes it possible for us to keep doing it and keep connecting. So we thank you for that.
We're talking with Soren Staff, guitarist and singer in the Eau Claire-based band, Them Cooley Boys, five-member Americana band, recently released a new album, Namesake. Is there something special about Eau Claire? You mentioned, you know, the Blue Ox, and I'm just wondering about that music scene in Eau Claire. Bon Iver is there. What is that like in the arts in Eau Claire?
Eau Claire just, I think they have a unique focus on supporting the arts that other towns don't. You know, I mean, for one, you know, the school district from you know, elementary all through high school has a focus on supporting their arts programs or music programs. You know, like Memorial has one of the best jazz programs in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the start to have like just like your public schools care about that is huge, and then the community in general has been investing in spaces that, you know, create and support music. And then outside of, you know, just like the big bucks coming in, you saw it a lot during COVID when all those places closed down. Then people found a way to have them in their backyards and have them safely. I think music has just always kind of found a way to exist and to thrive in Eau Claire. And I think it's because of the people here.
Let's go to Megan in East Troy. Hi, Megan.
Hi.
What song is on your mind?
I love Pray You Don't Get Lonely. So I just wanted Soren to know that. I've jammed up many times in my car singing that.
What do you love about the song?
Yeah, I just think the lyrics and how it kind of builds up, and I'm all about the build up and then the breakdown. So it's just catchy, and I think speaks to, like Soren said, some deeper issues, and especially for the pandemic, it seemed pretty poignant and fitting. So,
yes, Soren, before we listen to the song, help us set it up a little bit. What would you say about it?
Pray You Don't Get Lonely is kind of an invitation into my brain. You know, I deal with anxiety, and I you know, that song kind of asks like, is this just me, or does everybody else feel like this? And I think a lot of people feel that. And I think especially, you know, last year and during the pandemic, you know, people kind of retreated inward, and we kind of had to ask that question, hey, is everybody else going through it too? And I think there's some communal bits in that.
Let's hear a bit.
Did you step inside my head for a minute? Tell me if you ever find space. Can't tell if it's just me while I'm in it, or if everybody else all feels the same. When I saw you there, I knew you could.
So we're almost out of time, but Them Cooley Boys has a performance at First Ave in Minneapolis, a hallowed ground for Prince. What will it be like to perform at such an iconic venue, if all holds, of course, going back to that nimble?
Yes, right. Well, we actually have played at the Maid Stage 5 years ago.
Oh,
and that
okay.
was before, that was back when we were four piece. That was before we had drums. That's uh-huh. before we had electric instruments. So we are just so excited to be returning there as a rock and roll band. You mm-hmm. know, that space was built and by rock and roll bands. And you list off all these bands that are on the wall there and the stars, and it's something we're so excited to be, you know, a part of. And then to be supporting a band like Los Lobos, those guys are legends, and just truly, you know, it's an opportunity that we relish and we are so happy for.
Soren, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Kate.
Soren Staff, guitarist, singer-songwriter for Them Cooley Boys. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about encountering a stranger on a snowy road.
Driving home on a snowy Wisconsin night, author Crystal Chan and her mother encountered a hitchhiker in the blowing snow. The question of whether to pick him up or not led her to explore the meaning and limits of compassion. She brings us the story.
It was a bad snowstorm, the kind that wipes out your vision, erases the world, and makes you brake for a red light a full city block before you come to the intersection. It was nighttime, and my mom and I were in the car heading home over the viaduct on 20th Avenue in Oshkosh. The radio was off as my mom handled the vehicle on the heavy, slippery roads. That was when we saw him, a figure hunched over, walking on the sidewalk on that viaduct in full blast of the winter storm. In fact, because of the storm, we almost didn't see him. What could he possibly be doing in a storm like this? I asked my mom. I don't know, she said. He trudged along. We inched along. Mom paused. Should we pick him up? I was surprised at her question. There are dangers out there, murderers and rapists and thieves. There we were, two women in a car in a snowstorm, the heater blazing. There he was, a young man, hunched over into the blinding winds, almost disappeared from view. You couldn't help but feel for him. I'd never picked up anyone before. I had a good hunch that my mom hadn't either. Yeah, I said. Let's pick him up. I rolled down my window. Hey, where are you going? I asked. He told us. The location was halfway across town. In the darkness, I looked at Mom and she looked at me. I looked back at him. Come on in if you want, I said. We'll take you there. We rolled to a slow stop and he opened the door to the back seat. A blast of cold air followed him in. We asked him some general questions, but he didn't say much, so we crawled through town in silence. I was sweating under my winter coat. He is in our car, I thought. I cannot believe we actually picked up a stranger. Mom gripped the steering wheel with both hands. The man spoke only to give us directions to the house, and when we pulled alongside it, he thanked us twice, then got out. As soon as he left, it was as if a sudden storm had lifted, even though it was still snowing. We turned around and crawled our slow way home, both deeply shaken, both deeply pleased. It's easy to say that compassion is a good thing. It's much harder to live it out, especially when you need to weigh things like risk and danger and fear. Mom and I both agreed that had we been the only one in the car, we would have kept driving. If there had been two men walking, we would have kept driving. And so forth. There are no easy answers, and I've messed up this equation more times than I'd like, preferring the route of safety to the route of lived-out compassion. But in extending that gesture of decency, somehow I felt more human in the process, more connected, less alone. It can be mysterious how compassion works and how the strangest gifts can come in the strangest packaging in a snowstorm on a cold winter night.
Crystal Chan is a storyteller and author based in Chicago. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every Wisconsin Life story? Be sure to subscribe to our podcast feed and find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And now to Port Milwaukee, a global trade hub. The supply chain gridlock that we've seen in the pandemic has strained ports coast to coast. The bipartisan infrastructure law invests $17 billion in port infrastructure and waterways. So what might that mean for Milwaukee? Have you worked in cargo transit or on a ship? Where do you see bottlenecks or the need to replace aging infrastructure? What are you curious about and how ports operate? 800-642-1234. Adam Tyndall Schlicht is director of Port Milwaukee and president of the Wisconsin Commercial Ports Association. Adam, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hey, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here this morning.
Well, good morning. Let's start with the federal funding, $5.5 billion over the next several years for various, you know, projects. How do you hope Port Milwaukee might benefit from that those federal funds?
I mean, we welcomed news of the passage of the infrastructure bill. Our economy in the state of Wisconsin and across the Great Lakes region really relies on high employment, domestic commerce, and international trade. And our ports really are the hubs of that activity here in Wisconsin, and certainly at Port Milwaukee. The infrastructure bill is going to bring in new federal funding, much of it at the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, which will help coastal communities on the Mississippi River, Lake Superior, and Lake Michigan address some of that federal backlog. When we look to breakwaters that were built decades ago that maybe have been aging or antiquated, needed dredging. So a lot of federal investment, a lot of federal projects will be able to be tackled with the infrastructure bill. And we're also seeing a tremendous infusion of funds into grant programs, federal grant programs, like the Port Infrastructure Development Program, one that Port Milwaukee is already a recipient of, and really providing access to ports throughout Wisconsin to address some of that critical infrastructure backlog that we've been talking about for decades.
I wonder, because there are various ports in Wisconsin, are all the needs unique, or do some ports struggle with some things with infrastructure, others with other things? What is that like?
We are really blessed to be on both the Great Lakes and Mississippi River system. So it can change and be dependent port to port.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that is, I would argue, pretty common across larger ports like Superior and Milwaukee, even into smaller coastal harbors like Bayfield, for example, is that need for reinvestment in infrastructure. A lot of the dock walls, a lot of that maritime infrastructure that we use for commercial handling of freight, recreational fishing, or even pleasure boating really was built decades ago, if not 100 years ago, and is showing those signs of wear and tear. The infrastructure bill is going to help us address a lot of that need.
Okay, so let's talk about the supply chain crisis. You know, the image I have in my head is the 60 Minutes special in November, the overhead shot of the Port of Los Angeles, totally choked, pure, you know, throw up your hands gridlock with a massive container ships and semi-trailers. So what has the supply chain debacle been like for you at Port Milwaukee?
We are shaping it, and in the conversations that we're having with our domestic and international customers, we're trying to change the paradigm, change the conversation. Instead of focusing on the challenges that you're seeing at the largest East and West Coast ports, as you say, at LA and Long Beach, Baltimore, New York, New Jersey, bringing those customers back into the heartland of North America through direct shipments to Great Lakes ports, we actually have capacity. So the conversations that we're having is, if you're bringing your freight anyways to Wisconsin or Northern Illinois, why not bring your freight to a port like Milwaukee, like Superior, like Green Bay, where we have capacity and we can help be that relief valve during this time of challenge in the global supply chain.
How is that message being received? Are you getting it across?
We have high optimism heading into 2022. I mean, a lot of the challenges that we saw last year will continue into this year. Certainly inflation is a concern. Other issues are, you know, available workforce, that last mile, bringing freight from the port to the end customer, the beneficial user, making sure that there's a ready available source of sailors on the Great Lakes and abroad and truck drivers in our state. These are all issues that we will continue to confront in the new year and going forward. Certainly looking for continued relief in the tariff environment. President Biden and his administration has done over the last year a lot of work to try to release or address some of the tariffs that the previous administration brought into the international trade environment. And that has had an impact both on Milwaukee's trade and I would argue on Wisconsin's economy. And we're looking for more progress in that space as well.
Well, a slight sidebar, if you will, to trade is customs. Our economy depends on these big international shipping lines for our stuff, for our goods. And so you need to pass through U.S. Customs and Border Protection, the paperwork, the security, the inspections, all of it. Does that process and infrastructure need changes and improvement to handle more freight?
I think so. And the conversations that we're having with U.S. Customs is about local resources. Over the last 4 or 5 years, the federal priority for U.S. Customs was certainly its enforcement at the southern border. Mm-hmm. Even port offices in Milwaukee, at O'Hare and other places across the Great Lakes were asked to send their customs officers down to the southern border, which created sort of a customs backlog when you look at the needed service that we have in our state at airports, at maritime ports, and other places where customs handling and customs interventions are required. We recently welcomed a new customs director in Milwaukee, and that partnership has already proven fruitful in the last several months that she's been on the job. And again, it's a critical partnership, one that will continue to evolve, especially as we're having conversations about making major new investments in our ports. We won't be able to make those investments and bring that new trade unless we have U.S. Customs as a proactive partner at the table.
And you had said in the fall that Cleveland was the only Great Lakes port that U.S. Customs had allowed to receive overseas shipping containers. Has anything changed there?
Certainly. In recent months, we've seen a new container service come online at the Port of Duluth Superior. Mm-hmm. I have to say, as president of Wisconsin's commercial ports, and in my role as director of Port Milwaukee, I often look at our sister ports and my colleagues and the innovation that is taking place in that part of our state. In Duluth and Superior really is an inspiration to me and will continue to inform our work statewide. So hoping that that new service in Duluth becomes that relief valve that we're talking about, hopefully bringing new freight more reliably and efficiently to the northern part of Wisconsin through Duluth.
We're discussing port activity at a global hub, Port Milwaukee, with Adam Tindall-Schlicht. Have you been on a cruise? What were your ports of call? Is your business waiting for a huge shipment of something that is stuck at a port? Do you know what's going on with the delay? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The U.S. Department of Transportation calls American ports a cornerstone of the U.S. economy, but they've been hampered by outdated infrastructure, supply chain crisis, as we talked about in the pandemic. Port Milwaukee moved 2.8 million tons of goods in 2020. They're working on the numbers for 2021, I am told. Still time to talk about port traffic, how shipping works, Lake Michigan's rising water levels, 800-642-1234. Adam Tindall-Schlicht is director of Port Milwaukee with us for about 9 more minutes. Adam, let's talk cruise ships. Cruises haven't operated for the last couple years due to the pandemic. Is that going to change anytime soon?
We are very optimistic that we're going to have a return of our cruise activity in 2022. Right now, we are anticipating over 30 cruise visits to our port and over 10,000 visitors on cruise ships coming to Milwaukee via the Great Lakes. Couldn't be happier that this service is potentially returning. Again, we are keeping a deliberate eye to the pandemic and the latest trends in COVID-19. We, of course, will follow all public health guidance. But what we're seeing is a desire to return to cruise activity across North America. And I think that our passengers are going to really be excited about opportunities to be on the Great Lakes. I call it the familiar unfamiliar. by 7 to 10 days on the Great Lakes, really these passengers will have access to new cities, new towns, new villages, but also have close comfort and close access to North American healthcare, which may provide a sense of calm after the pandemic.
So I'm feeling around in the dark here. Are we talking like Pearl Mist, Viking Cruises, a mix of both, or some other cruise line?
Kate, look at you. Have you been on a cruise ship?
No. I mean, yes. I do my homework. I'm like the crack journalist here.
Okay. I mean, you brought up two of my favorite cruise lines that are coming to Milwaukee. The Pearl Mist, which is operated by Pearl Seas, recently signed a 20-year agreement to maintain its service at Port Milwaukee for the next 2 decades. And Viking Cruises, which just built its new ship, the Viking Octantis, which it was built to be the largest cruise ship that can come from abroad into the Great Lakes, is expected to home port in Milwaukee later this year. That Viking ship is also expected to call other places in the state like Bayfield and Algoma. So Milwaukee is becoming the backbone for international Great Lakes cruising, but it's spreading that economic impact and that freshwater tourism across the state with these ships based in Milwaukee.
I wonder, does size matter? Because Pearl Mist is a smaller ship, I think up to 210 passengers. I don't know what's in store with Viking, but what do you look for in the size of the cruise ship, or doesn't that matter? That's a long pause. Are you still there? I think we just went on mute, perhaps. Oh, I hope we didn't lose Adam Tindall-Schlicht. I'll reintroduce you. Adam is director of Port Milwaukee. As we talk about the port activity, being on cruises, you can join in. Are you curious about how shipping works on the Great Lakes? Have you worked in cargo or on a ship? Are you waiting for an order to arrive that's been delayed by supply chain bottlenecks? How are those delays affecting your life? And what about cruises? What do you think about cruises in and out of Milwaukee? Join in at 800-642-1234. Adam, we lost you there for just a moment, I think.
I think we were talking about the size of vessels.
Yes, size of vessels. Yeah, exactly. Go ahead.
So basically with these new cruise ships, they're being built to maximize the size of the St. Lawrence Seaway locks. So any vessel that comes to the Port of Milwaukee or any other port still needs to navigate safely through those 15 locks on the St. Lawrence River and by Niagara Falls. So really, these cruise ships are always going to be niche in size, really no more than 500 passengers. But we think that provides a really unique experience for them.
So what will the cruise ship business do for income generated from docking rights from these annual rents for these ships to pull up and dock in Milwaukee?
In Milwaukee, the direct revenue that we will receive from all of this cruise activity really is in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. But why we love this opportunity is about the bigger economic impact. These passengers are spending days in cities and towns across Wisconsin, like Milwaukee. And during those on-land excursions are really spending time in our cultural amenities, in cafes, in restaurants, in hotels. And that's why this is such a unique opportunity.
I know you don't have the 2021 tonnage numbers finalized, but 2020 was kind of surprising because tonnage was increasing a 7-year high. What does that spell to you as, you know, in this pandemic era?
It's an interesting time. So what we saw last year across the Great Lakes were many ports struggled. Duluth, for example, had its lowest commercial tonnage since the Great Depression. Milwaukee was quite a national outlier in the fact that we had 5% growth last year and 11% growth the year prior. That said, trade is cyclical. We're seeing a tremendous bounce back in a lot of commercial performance for Great Lakes ports and Wisconsin's ports that struggled last year. Milwaukee, we're still looking at our tonnage. I imagine we will probably be down 5 to 10%. That's really right within our wheelhouse in that 2 to 3 million metric tons per year, really keeping us as Wisconsin's second largest commercial port.
And in terms of what is being carried, the goods, is agriculture, is that still a leading commodity?
Our leading commodity is actually salt. So we are the largest salt distributor, not only in southeastern Wisconsin, but as the long winter goes on, across the state and across a multi-state region. But agriculture is something that is near and dear to my heart. Right now at the port, we are building our new $35 million agricultural export terminal in partnership with the Clinton, Wisconsin-based company DeLong. This will be one of the first agricultural bulk export terminals on the Great Lakes, which will provide direct access to international shipping for Wisconsin farmers. And I just have to give credit to the incredible team of partners that have helped bring in the public-private financing for this terminal. We have had support at every level of government, from then Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett to current Milwaukee Mayor Chevy Johnson, up to Tony Evers and his administration, and certainly the U.S. Department of Transportation. None of this would have been possible, this major investment at the port, without that PIDP funding that we previously talked about.
Adam.
Really an awesome opportunity.
Adam, good to talk to you. Thank you for joining us.
Sorry again for the disruption. Have a great weekend.
You too, Adam Tindall-Schlick, Director of Port Milwaukee. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.